This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqara, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنْبَتَتْ سَبْعَ سَنَابِلَ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنْبَتَتْ سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of the grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: at least 11 Palestinians, including children, are killed in fresh Israeli attacks on Gaza. Elsewhere, the U.S. presses ahead with its aggression against Yemen, launching around 20 attacks on Saada and Amman. And also in our headlines, thousands of protesters take to the streets in Istanbul for the eighth night of mass rallies and protests at the detention of the city's mayor. Our top story for this half hour: more Palestinian civilians fall victim to Israel's genocidal war on Gaza as the regime continues to pound the blockaded territory with air and artillery strikes. The regime's fresh attacks have killed at least 11 Palestinians since the early hours of morning. The targeted areas include Jabalia in the north and a neighborhood near the southern city of Rafah. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, over 60 Palestinians were killed and nearly 360 injured in the Tuesday strikes. The new fatalities bring the death toll from Israel's renewed aggression on Gaza since March 18th to nearly 800. The overall death toll from the regime's genocide since October 2023 now stands at over 50,140, with more than 113,700 injured. Gaza's health ministry warns that Israel is enforcing a policy of slowly killing Palestinians by blocking the entry of aid, including fuel and medical supplies, into the territory. The ministry added that Gaza is facing severe shortages of fuel and essential medical supplies, including gauze and oxygen tanks. It noted that there's only one operational power generator at the Indonesian hospital, where seven intensive care patients are at risk if the generator fails. The ministry stressed that the lack of medicine for chronic illnesses such as hypertension and diabetes is leading to more deaths in Gaza. It described Israel's war on Gaza as a war of annihilation, adding that the current state of the territory's health sector is beyond catastrophic. Israel's detention of an Oscar-winning Palestinian filmmaker for almost 24 hours after he was attacked by Israeli settlers and soldiers in the West Bank. The filmmaker Hamdan Balal now says that the goal of the attack was to kill him.
It was a very strong attack, and the goal was to kill. After I won the Oscar, I did not expect to be exposed to such attacks. I thought that after the Oscars, the attacks became more focused on us and a threat to our lives in the future. An Israeli settler turned around and hit me on the head with the first punch. Of course, he was hitting me all over my body, and there was also a soldier with him hitting me. There are army shifts that change. They change. We hear the sound and we know that someone is changing. They were talking about this guy who won the Oscar. I don't know Hebrew, but I hear my name Hamdan, and I understand that they are talking about the film.
Balal added that the regime's troops then began threatening, brandishing weapons, and using foul language against him. Upon his release, Balal said he was kept blindfolded in Israeli detention. The Palestinian director was beaten and then detained in the village of Susia on Monday. The Oscar-winning documentary named No Other Land, that he co-directed with several other filmmakers, explores the struggles of living under Israeli occupation. Tensions are running high across the occupied West Bank as the Israeli military presses ahead with incursions into its towns and refugee camps. In Beit Lahm, Israeli troops raided Palestinian homes and abducted several of their residents. They have also raided the Balata refugee camp near Nablus and several other camps across the territory as well. For more on this story, we're now joined by our Ramallah correspondent, Nara Hamed. Nara, welcome to the program. Please walk us through what's taking place in the occupied West Bank.
Yes, the situation over here in the West Bank, as you have described, many incursions, many attacks, and the IOF is continuously moving forward, pushing more military force inside the West Bank, the cities of the West Bank. Last night was an extreme tensive last night in the area of Ash-Sharqawi in Jenin, where violent raids and clashes happened between the raiding IOF forces to the area and Palestinian resistant fighters. This incursion has led to many arrests among the Palestinians, including Uday al-Ba'jawi, one of the leaders of the Jenin battalion and one of the most wanted Palestinian freedom fighter or resistant fighter over here in the West Bank. He has been persuaded for 3 years now. The IOF was looking for him and tracking him down for 3 years. Last night, unfortunately, he was captured by the IOF forces in the area of Al-Ba'jawi after violent clashes between him and between the IOF forces in that area. Not only that was the unfortunate event in Jenin last night, but also that the IOF is now preparing themselves to demolish more than 90 homes inside Jenin refugee camp and into the area that is surrounding Jenin refugee camp. And this is after the Israeli higher court have dismissed a plea from the families of the Jenin refugee camp to stop the demolishing order, but the higher court have refused this plea and refused this petition from the Palestinian families. So the IOF now is preparing to demolish even more homes inside the already demolished and broken Jenin refugee camp. The situation also in Tulkarem remained tensive, as the IOF is still working on the infrastructure and displacing many families in Tulkarem and in Nur Shams refugee camp. It is actually quite strange that whenever we talk about that families are moving out of the refugee camps, that some still manages to forcibly displace more Palestinians and more families. Just a while ago, the governor of Tulkarem said that 100% of the families in Nur Shams have evacuated, have been forcibly evacuated from inside the refugee camp. But now we are seeing more families moving out, and this is because the IOF is expanding the range of the military operation, the Iron Wall. It's not limited to inside Jenin's refugee camp or Nur Shams refugee camp, but it is also taking a broader area to the perimeter of these refugee camps. This is all a part. This is one episode of the series of attacks upon Palestinian refugee camps: Askar and Balata refugee camps, Al-Fawar refugee camp in Al-Khalil, also over here in Al-Jalazon refugee camp in Ramallah. All of these refugee camps have been attacked. And speaking of Ramallah, Al-Mghayr village now is being under extensive raid since the hours of last night. This is quite intense to the people of Al-Mghayr, that they have been suffering so much by the IOF and the Israeli settlers who have confiscated thousands of for Palestinians inside Al-Mghayr field. As we have spoken to local resources from inside Al-Mghayr, they have informed us that the IOF is making one of the freed prisoners, which is Atif Abu Aliya, who has been freed in the last patch, in the last prisoner swap between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli regime. They are taking his home, his house, and making it a field interrogation center to bring the youth and the Palestinians to that house and field re-interrogate them. We are talking also about more than 15 Palestinian freed prisoners who have been re-detained happening until this moment in detention. We don't know whether they will be rearrested or is it just an interrogation and they will be freed later. Another incident took place in Ni'lin, to the west of Ramallah today, is that the IOF has fired live ammunition upon a Palestinian young man, Youssef Sroor, and then abducted him. After several hours, the people of Ni'lin found Youssef thrown near the fence of Nili settlement, which is near Ni'lin, unable to move nor to speak, and he was taken to the hospital to get further details about his health condition. The situation also in Al Khalil remained extremely tense, as the Israeli settlers are intensifying their presence and their attacks upon Palestinians in Al Khalil, whether it is in the old city of Al Khalil or in the area of Masafer Yatta to the south of Al Khalil, especially to the area of Sousse. You have been talking, Mardia, about the attack on the Palestinian filmmaker Bilal, Hamdan Bilal, and this is actually not the first attack on one of the directors of the film No Other Land. This is not the first attack from the settlers in upon those Palestinians, and even that one Israeli peace activist was involved in the directing of this film, and he was also attacked by the Israeli settlers in the area of Sousse to the south of Al Khalil. This area has been suffering tremendously by the settlers' attacks, as on a daily basis there are confrontations over their injuries among the Palestinian people, who are left alone to face this unprecedented settler violence.
All right, thanks a lot. Nahal Ahmed joining us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. The Yemeni armed forces have carried out fresh anti-U.S. and anti-Israel operations as the Arab country remains the supporter of Palestine amid the ongoing Gaza genocide.
The missile, UAV, and the naval forces carried out a joint military operation targeting enemy warships in the Red Sea, led by the U.S. aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman, from which the aggression against our country is launched.
Saadi said the attack on U.S. warships was in response to the American aggression against Yemen. He said the Yemeni armed forces also struck Israeli military targets in the occupied Yafa area with a number of drones, adding that the operation successfully achieved its objectives. The spokesman reiterated that the attacks on Israeli targets will not come to an end until the aggression on Gaza stops or the territory is lifted. The operations come as the U.S. military continues to pound areas across Yemen. According to Yemeni media, U.S. warplanes bombed the northwestern province of Saada for nearly 20 times in a matter of hours. Well, it's been nearly a decade since a Saudi-led coalition launched its military campaign in Yemen with U.S. support. What started as an attempt to reinstate former President Abdrabbu Mansour Hadi turned into one of the world's most devastating conflicts. Now, years after a ceasefire was reached, Yemenis are still grappling with the aftermath. Abdul Latif Al-Washani reports from Sana'a.
March 25th, 2015, the day when the Saudi-led coalition launched a military campaign in Yemen to reinstate former President Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi, an ally of Saudi Arabia. The campaign aimed to push the Ansarullah movement back to Saada in northern Yemen as well. With support from the United States, the coalition also sought to establish a buffer zone between Saudi Arabia and Yemen.
When the Saudi-led aggression against the Yemeni people began in 2015, it had no clear objectives. However, when the aggressors realized they were entangled in this war, they declared an official goal through a meeting at the United Nations Security Council and Resolution 2216, which was to reinstate Abdrabbu Mansour Hadi to power. Yet they failed to achieve this goal, along with all the objectives they had set for their coalition.
The United Nations estimates that the war in Yemen has killed 337,000 people by the end of 2021. The deaths include those caused by both conflict and indirect causes, such as hunger and preventable diseases. According to UN officials, the indirect causes were to blame for the majority of the deaths, as the Saudi-led coalition maintained an all-out blockade on Yemen, a country dependent on international aid to meet its basic needs, even prior to the war.
As the 10th anniversary of the aggression against Yemen arrives, the blockade continues to severely impact the healthcare sector, causing immense suffering due to the ongoing restrictions on medical supplies. During the years of aggression, airstrikes have targeted 55% of the healthcare sector, rendering 98% of medical equipment non-operational, as we have been unable to repair them or secure spare parts.
The years-long war also devastated other key infrastructure, including airports. The airstrikes, coupled with the crippling blockade, created what the United Nations called the world's worst humanitarian crisis, leaving millions struggling for basic necessities.
There have been many tragedies over the past 10 years of the blockade, both in humanitarian terms and in material losses. On the humanitarian side, there have been significant losses of lives, especially among patients with critical illnesses who needed to travel for treatment but were prevented due to the airport closure. In addition, many students were unable to continue their studies, and tourism came to a complete halt, inflicting severe losses on the national economy.
Archaeological sites were not safe from attacks either. According to a 2019 report by the UN's cultural agency UNESCO, Yemeni cultural heritage sites were heavily affected, mostly through collateral damage. Following years of deaths and destruction, a ceasefire was agreed on April 2, 2022, under UN sponsorship. But while the fighting has largely stopped, Yemen's economic crisis continues, and the struggle to rebuild remains an uphill battle.
Even with a ceasefire in place, the scars of war are still visible across Yemen. Families who lost everything now face the challenge of rebuilding their lives amid an economic crisis. For many Yemenis, the road to recovery is far from over. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana'a.
In Turkey, demonstrations against the detention of former Istanbul Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu continue unabated as thousands return to the city streets. Thousands of university students flooded a major district in Istanbul. Heading for the municipal headquarters, they demanded resignation of the government. While waving flags and banners, people in nearby buildings bashed pots to show their solidarity with protesters. A new demonstration came after a court in Istanbul jailed seven journalists for covering the protests. Separately, thousands also rallied for the eighth straight night in a protest organized by İmamoğlu's Republican People's Party, or the CHP. The leader of the opposition party has called for mass rallies over the weekend to protest the arrest of İmamoğlu, demand open trials, and call for early elections. The call for the Saturday rally comes as almost 1,500 people have already been arrested. İmamoğlu, a politician from the CHP, was seen as the main rival to the incumbent Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, for the next presidential election slated for 2028. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
streets and alleys. Ever since you left, I must confess, the world has become a total mess. You were the bridge that connected hearts, always there for us when we were in distress. Everywhere I look, I see your trace. You tried to make the world a better place. Oppressors will never forget your frown. The oppressed will not forget the smile on your face. Oh, how you shine like a constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how it feels under the tree of bliss. The trees you planted are missing you, but they've learned to blossom just like you. Though you were martyred mercilessly, an army of you is growing globally. 'Cause people are tired of all this prejudice. They wanna fight like you against injustice. Your name is Qasem Soleimani. You're a hero of humanity.
You defy the limits of intelligence, sending shivers down the spine of global arrogance. You decried oppression in every form, even though it put you in the eye of the storm. You extinguished the flames of terror far and wide. You helped countries to reclaim their land that was occupied. That's why people will remember you as a hero, though the powers that be will picture you as a foe. You see, they instigate the terror and manipulate the news so they can whitewash every crime to make the world confused. They can say what they want, let them curse at the mirror. Truth will always prevail, let them live in error.
You found the key to heaven's gate, martyred for justice, what a noble fate. Your legacy will linger on forever, your name we celebrate. Oh, how you shine like a constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how it feels under the tree of bliss.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned and ordained and decreed and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Ramadan, month of God's banquet. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. The blessed month of Ramadan is like a rainfall on a dry desert. It is an exceptional opportunity to saturate the parched desert of our soul with this enlivening rainfall. Ramadan is the time to get rid of the hustle and bustle of everyday life and join the infinite mercy of God. Let us first listen to Ayah 185 of Surah Baqarah. The month of Ramadan is the one in which the Quran was sent down as guidance to mankind, with manifest proofs of guidance and the criterion. Ramadan has provided the best chance for getting close to God and benefiting from His mercy. It is the month of prayer, supplication, and getting close to the Quran. Stay with us for the 25th episode of this series. Today we are going to speak about the love of the Prophet and his spotlessly pure progeny, the Ahlul Bayt. We beseech to God to illuminate our hearts with the light of the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt. The love of the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt is beyond a simple and transitional feeling. It has its roots in essence of creation and freshens the life like a clean spring. This love does not remain in our hearts, but rather is manifested in our conduct and every part of our life. God says to the Prophet in Ayah 24 of Surah Tawbah to tell people, say, if your fathers and your sons, your brethren, your wives, and your kinsfolk, and the possessions that you have acquired, the business you fear may suffer, and the houses you are fond of are dearer to you than Allah and His Apostle, and to waging jihad in His way, then wait until Allah issues His edict and Allah does not guide the transgressing lot. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, none of you will reach perfect faith until I am dearer to him than himself, his family, and all his properties. What does this mean? Is it enough to say, I love the Prophet? Surely not. True love means to try to resemble him. This will materialize through kindness, honesty, justice, and helping others. Each one of the Ahlul Bayt is a role model for the best way of living. The blessed month of Ramadan is the opportunity to build a close bond with the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt as the two weighty things which the Prophet recommended us to cling to. Fasting, recitation of the Quran, and all other worships will be incomplete and useless without the love of the Ahlul Bayt, which leads to obeying them. Now let us recite the prayer for the 25th day of the blessed month of Ramadan. O Allah, place me on this day among those who love your friends and hate your enemies, following the way of the seal of your prophets, O guardian of the hearts of prophets. This is what we know as Tawalla and Tabarra, as the two principles of religion. It means loving the friends of God and hating his enemies. God says in part of Ayah 22 of Surah Mujadele, you will not find a people believing in Allah and the last day, endearing those who oppose Allah and his apostle, even though they were their own parents, or children, or brothers, or kinsfolk. This Ayah is the criterion and yardstick for faith. It explicitly says that if we love God truly, we cannot love those who disobey him. But we should remember that this love and enmity must be for God's sake and not for our own desire and personal intentions. Loving someone and hating another out of undue bigotry has no value. True love of God is to move in his way and obey his commands. This will lead us to righteous deeds. Imam Ali, peace be upon him, says, whoever loves us will be with us. And if a person loves a stone, God will resurrect him with that stone. Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace be upon him, also says, if you want to test yourself, look at your heart. If you see that you love the friends of God and hate the sinners, know that goodness is in your hand and God loves you too. This statement is a good criterion to test our love and hatred. In today's prayer also, we ask God two great things, the love of his friends and hatred of his enemies. These are the firm bases of faith which keep us strongly on the right path. Well, dear listeners, let us finish this episode with the prayer we recite every day. O Allah, indeed, I ask you the best of what you are asked, so give me the best of what you give.
meaningful moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Black and white.
Hablar del Líbano.
Discussing Lebanon means delving into a hub of conflicts where various positions clash.
Conviven y luchan entre sí las posiciones que hablan de
advocating for national liberation and social justice against those promoting subjugation and colonialism.
El Líbano contemporáneo es un país aún.
Contemporary Lebanon still faces challenges related to decolonization, with the lingering influence of French and even American imperialism. This is just one aspect of Lebanon.
Esa es una parte del Líbano. Pero también está la parte.
On the other hand, there are those who strive for sovereignty and independence, standing in solidarity with their Palestinian brothers. This represents the resistance of Lebanon, comprising democratic and popular forces from various parties.
Uno de ellos, el más destacado,
among them, Hezbollah stands out, having played a heroic role in sacrificing many of its founding leaders.
Los mejores líderes, los líderes fundadores en esa resistencia.
In the fight against the Zionist occupiers.
El Líbano vive en una situación.
Lebanon finds itself in a very complex economic situation, with 44% of its population living below the poverty line. And in some rural areas, this figure rises to 62%. The country faces ongoing destruction from bombings carried out by the Zionist entity,
bombardeos que significa destrucción de viviendas,
which devastated homes, schools, hospitals, churches, universities, workplaces, and even agricultural lands.
Industria, inclusive plantaciones.
Despite these challenges, Lebanon continues to exist and embodies the spirit of solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Ser solidario con el pueblo palestino. Incluso producido inmediatamente.
Following the resistance action on October 7, 2023, Lebanon, through Hezbollah, opened a second front the very next day, October 8th, to alleviate the pressure of the attacks on Gaza and draw some of that focus towards itself. This act demonstrates a profound sense of solidarity, signaling that Lebanon stands with Palestine. Lebanon gained its independence in 1943, and by 1946, French troops had withdrawn. However, the Nakba in 1948 led to the displacement of nearly a million Palestinians. Many sought refuge in Lebanon, and the political and social landscape of the country has been significantly shaped by the presence of the Palestinian people, leading to an immediate expression of solidarity. Lebanon finds itself in a complex situation, caught between factions that still aspire to serve imperial interests, primarily those of France, and by extension the United States and pro-Zionist agendas. On the other hand, there is a significant and healthier segment of the population that's striving for national liberation, while also standing in solidarity with the broader liberation movements in Western Asia, especially the Palestinian people. We are confident that this small nation will discover its path and will consistently be a strong and united force in the resistance. The political parties aligned with this vision are likely to assert their perspectives, as the people demand it. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Huartes.
Soy Eduardo Huartes. La prensa hegemónica occidental.
Western mainstream media often portrays Lebanon as an oasis of European civilization that's been lost.
De civilización europea que se habría perdido.
It seems to have fallen under a sort of curse, straying from its promise of Western democracy and a French lifestyle. The reality is that contemporary Lebanon, since its independence in 1943, a rather limited independence, has stood in solidarity with Palestine. It has faced numerous aggressions from the Zionist occupiers of Palestinian land.
Independencia, una independencia que todavía es mezquina.
The Zionist occupiers have also faced their share of defeats in this confrontation. Lebanon is a country of both light and shadow. To discuss Lebanon today, its people, organizations, and resistance, we have Alex and Franz with us. He is a Catalan national currently in Casablanca, working as an independent researcher and journalist, as well as an educator and political analyst for various international media outlets.
En varios medios de comunicación internacionales. Es coautor.
He's also a co-author of the documentary Palestine, The Murdered Truth, Voices for Peace.
Por la paz. Bienvenido, Alex.
Alex and Franz, welcome to Black and White.
Negro y blanco.
Hola, Eduardo.
Hello, Eduardo. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Alex, ¿cómo podemos definir?
It's a pleasure. Alex, how can we characterize contemporary Lebanon, considering its social and political contradictions, along with the imperialist interference, primarily from France and still from the United States, in education and various other sectors, right? In that context, how is it possible for resistance and solidarity with the Palestinian people to take root, grow, and thrive? Well, Lebanon has a unique history. If we consider the insights of one of the prominent contemporary intellectuals, George Korn,
who recently passed away, we can see how he examined Lebanon's diverse identity, particularly in relation to its mountainous regions and cities. Historically, Lebanon's population is made up of various communities, often referred to as confessional groups, and this confessionalism was indeed reinforced by foreign presence. The history of Lebanon dates back to the Ottoman Empire, when it was recognized as an autonomous entity. Following the dismantling of the Ottoman Empire, France took control of the region. French colonialism capitalized on the existing communitarianism and the various religious communities present. This dynamic has significantly contributed to the tensions experienced in Lebanon since its independence. The Civil War period is well known, and while it cannot be solely attributed to religious war, the vision of progressive or reactionary society was based on the existence of these religious communities, according to their own interests. It's important to note that foreign powers have been heavily involved in Lebanon, manipulating these interests for their own benefit. However, Lebanese nationalism exists beyond communal or religious affiliations, and this national identity is inextricably linked to the fate of the Palestinian people. It's crucial to address the issue of solidarity with the Palestinian people. Since the establishment of a Zionist regime in the region, over 700,000 Palestinian refugees were displaced, with more than 100,000 finding refuge in Lebanese society. This historical context significantly influences recent events, making the resistance against ongoing Zionist aggression towards the Lebanese people an essential aspect to consider.
Contra el pueblo libanés es un elemento muy importante a tener en cuenta.
Sí, en esa misma línea.
Yes, it's quite striking that the artificial creation of this entity known as the regime of Israel occurred so rapidly. Lebanon adopted a generally hostile stance, which is a significant aspect of its history. In 1948, Lebanon quickly aligned itself with the Palestinians, welcoming them and supporting their cause, which also led to the development of resistance. What influence, dear Alex, do you think the presence of Palestinians has had on shaping the current identity and mindset of Lebanon?
De lo que es el Líbano actual.
Bueno, yo diría que la cuestión, los derechos del pueblo palestino forman parte de la identidad de los pueblos árabes.
I would say that the rights of the Palestinian people are an integral part of Arab identity. This does not mean that there aren't national realities or distinct identities for each country. Otherwise, we would fall into the trap of the arguments made by Zionism and imperialism, which aim to erase individual identity. From the very beginning, Zionism sought to eliminate Palestinian identity, viewing them merely as Arabs who should be expelled to neighboring countries. However, Palestinian national identity is rooted in its own history and struggles. It's also important to remember that the Lebanese people have been affected since the inception of the Zionist project, particularly with the massacre at Hula, which marked the beginning of aggression. This cannot be erased from our collective memory.
Alex,
we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. We're back with Alex Anfrans. Alex, you were explaining to us the importance of distinguishing the nationality of the Palestinian nation as such, as well as the nationality of the Lebanese nation. You were delving a bit deeper into that. Please continue.
Estabas profundizando un poco eso. Adelante.
It's important to recognize that various factors contribute to the formation of a nation, but the feeling of belonging to that nation is something that cannot be erased by force. The Palestinian identity is very much alive. I have had the opportunity to witness this firsthand during my visit to the West Bank on several occasions. This national identity transcends religious beliefs and encompasses a vision for society, fostering dialogue that allows for future aspirations. In Lebanon, we witnessed the fourth military aggression, marking a historical pattern of invasions and a series of massacres against the Lebanese civilian population. The 2006 war was a significant Zionist aggression prior to the current situation, which ultimately ended in a defeat for the Zionist army. Hezbollah, recognized as the Islamic resistance of the Shia faith, made a significant mark as the only Arab military force capable of historically defeating that criminal army. The aim was to eliminate this example, but it's crucial to remember that within the doctrine of the Zionist army, the Dahia doctrine, it was approved in 2006, named after a neighborhood in Beirut. This doctrine indicated that the civilian casualties in Lebanon or any other country were of little concern, meaning that attacks on civilian populations were not to be considered. This clearly aligns with the concept of indiscriminate attacks on civilians, which has also been evident in the ongoing offensive in Gaza for over a year, a situation that many international observers have already labeled as genocide.
Por muchos observadores internacionales ha sido ya caracterizado como un genocidio.
Así es, pero el genocidio ha sido de tal naturaleza.
Absolutely. The genocide has been of such a nature that it has profoundly affected the world, and this is crucial to recognize. Well, here is the question. How have the events in Syria influenced the capabilities of resistance groups, particularly Hezbollah and other Lebanese resistance forces, in terms of Lebanon's sovereignty and support for the Palestinian nation? How do you see the impact of the new situation in Syria? How does this situation appear in Western Asia?
There are two perspectives on the situation. One can be described as a geographical viewpoint, focusing on the balance of power and international forces vying for control over territories and various strategic projects. The other perspective, which I favor, centers on the experiences of the people. Considering in Syria, it clearly represents a setback for the alliances and support that Syria has provided as part of what is seen as a resistance axis. This axis, as I explained, emerged and strengthened following the 2006 defeat and Hezbollah's subsequent victory. However, it's important to note that Hezbollah is not the only historical actor that has opposed the actions of the criminal Zionist army. For this reason, I emphasize the importance of recognizing that Hezbollah's formation dates back to 1982. History does not solely revolve around the geopolitical viewpoints of major powers, even if this situation leads to a reduction in support, particularly in terms of weaponry or infrastructure, it does not signify the end of resistance. The Lebanese people have shown resilience even before Hezbollah was established. They have consistently asserted their sovereignty and independence against both Zionist invasions and various regional actors that have interfered in their country's politics. It's important to recognize that Lebanon is currently facing one of the highest debt levels in the world. The nation has been devastated on multiple fronts economically, largely due to the influence of international players since the early 1990s. Despite this fragile situation, the Lebanese people have continued to resist, and that resistance is far from over. This is a struggle of the people, manifesting in various contexts and conflicts throughout history. It would be a mistake to underestimate the impact of NATO's Western offensive in the region, which poses a challenge to what could be seen as an alliance supporting the defense of both the Palestinian and Lebanese peoples. Nonetheless, this resistance will persist in one form or another. The Secretary General of Hezbollah has urged the Lebanese state and its army to act courageously in confronting what he describes as Zionist aggression.
The
this situation may benefit the more reactionary sectors, or perhaps Hezbollah's call will have a stronger impact in rallying Lebanese national unity against the Zionist entity. What are your thoughts on this contradiction at this time?
La entidad sionista. ¿Qué opinas tú sobre esa contradicción en este momento?
Bueno, en primer lugar, una cosa importante destacar es que...
First of all, it's important to highlight that Hezbollah, as a resistance movement, has strengthened its position within the fragile Lebanese political system. This system has been affected by various actors, particularly Saudi Arabia, which has played a significant role in Lebanon's economic politics alongside figures like Rafik Hariri. Their involvement in issues such as debt and privatization has led to a severely deteriorated economic situation, with over 80% of the population living in poverty. Additionally, the current crisis has resulted in nearly a million internally displaced persons due to the ongoing war. The arrival of Syrian refugees adds another layer to the situation. It's essential to recognize that despite everything happening, Hezbollah serves as a catalyst for a national resistance of the Lebanese people. Contrary to the label of terrorist often used in Western and Zionist propaganda, it represents a national struggle. While there are other progressive and resistance forces, the Lebanese army and the state currently lack trustworthiness. Over the past years, we've seen that there isn't a truly functioning Lebanese government, leading to a state of significant fragility. Nevertheless, the popular support for the resistance is a crucial factor. This support is often targeted by propaganda, which attempts to justify attacks on civilians by claiming that weapons are hidden among them, a claim that is simply untrue. The Israeli army has targeted over 50 hospitals and has bombed essential water resources, distribution centers, primary care facilities, and schools. Attacks on civilian infrastructure cannot be justified in any way. This reflects the strategy of a criminal army attempting to punish the civilian population, fully aware that this resistance movement has support among the people.
Absolutely, Alex. Israel must withdraw from this country's south by the January 26th deadline. However, the Zionist entity has completely disregarded, continuing with numerous atrocities. We really appreciate you being with us on this program here on Black and White. Thank you so much.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much to you.
Thank you.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atar, the host of this program. This series of the program Viewpoints is mainly concerned with the speeches and thoughts of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, also known as Imam Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Ali and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
So, and Shaykh Ali, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, very recently, in one of the speeches of Imam Khamenei, he talked about a very important concept, which is Jihad-e-Tabyin. And so many people in Iran, inside Iran and outside Iran, were shocked by this, we can say, type of look at the world and at the concept of jihad. Because this is the first time that this term has been coined by the Rahbar, and he used it. So now there are so many, we can say, explanations, commentaries, and interpretations written on this concept. Of course, Rahbar, in his speech, gave us a very nice framework for Jihad-e-Tabyin. But this is good to be more familiar with this concept, maybe for the English-speaking people all around the world through this radio show, Viewpoints. So, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the correct methodology of practicing Jihad-e-Tabyin, also the tools which are required for this type of jihad. Sheikh Ali, let's start with you, brother. First of all, what is the method or methodology of Jihad-e-Tabyin?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As we have discussed before previously, that Jihad-e-Tabyin is the jihad of clarification, the jihad of explanation. And we have said that the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has announced it to be in context of the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic system, that pure Muhammadan Islam, that is the extension of the movement of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. Now, discussing about this methodology of jihad-e-tabyin, there are, like in every other field, there could be different classifications and different ways yes. one can approach this divine jihad. But one thing that has to be there is the element of enemy, mm-hmm. right? So the first and foremost ingredient of this methodology is recognizing the enemy, who the true enemy is. Unfortunately, sometimes because of our shallow understandings, we kind of, you know, decide an enemy yes. for ourselves, which is not really the enemy of Islam.
Rahbar has called us Dushman Shanasi.
Dushman Shanasi, right? Recognizing yes. the right enemy. So yes. I'm gonna speak about four points when it comes